Hi, this is Bill Teeple and Alan Cobb, and this is Icon Art Radio. We're here today with George Ferrier and Dave Butler. Dave Butler is known in Fairfield as the Power Wagon Guy. Coming up this weekend is the 20th anniversary of the Power Wagon Rally, which draws people from all over the country. Even people come from all over the world for this event. It's a very significant and special, unique thing that happens here in Fairfield. So we're going to have him talk a little bit about that. We also have George Ferrier, and this is a long story, and we'll just hit the tip of the iceberg of this story, I think, on this radio show. George was on an expedition, several expeditions, but one in particular, or two around 1950, 51, to Arabia. He traveled as the sidekick of Wendell Phillips, who led an expedition to find the Temple of the Queen of Sheba in Arabia, and with 17 Dodge Power Wagons, and that's the connection with the Dodge Power Wagon. We are collaborating with Dave this time for the 20th anniversary of the Power Wagon Rally at Icon, and having an exhibition of some of the wonderful photos and memorabilia and posters and various things involved with Dodge Power Wagons and this very famous Arabian expedition. So it's good to have you guys with us today.
Thanks, Bill.
Tell us a little bit about, just to begin with, the Dodge Power Wagon Rally and the history of it.
Well, I guess it was back in about 1987. I spoke with a friend of mine. We were both interested in power wagons, and we said, wouldn't it be great to get everybody that has a power wagon together? And so the first rally was held actually this week in June in 1988. And we had such a good time and such a demand for it to return that we every year had the rally at about the same time every year. And over the years, we even have people here that have been here every single year since the rally began. It's quite an interesting group and really a wide variety of people that are interested in these. And they trailer them in, they drive them in, you name it, from all over the country just so they can be here and talk Power Wagon with all the other guys.
Great, and you have a lot of activities that you do.
We do. We have a lot of activities this year. Some of the stuff that that are some of our favorite activities, we have a big wiener roast out at a farm out just northwest of Fairfield on the Gene Book Farm. And then we'll have trail rides, although our trail rides this year may not happen in the fashion that we normally do because of the heavy rains we've had. We also have a banquet this year. We have a contra dance down on the square, and of course we have our preview to all the Power Wagon folks from out of town for the Icon Gallery show. And we are also open for open house and that for people to
so
get
yeah,
the
how
parts
can
for
the public
truck.
Participate?
Probably the best thing for the public to do would be to come on Saturday morning to the square. We actually have a giant parade that stretches all the way from the fairgrounds all the way to the downtown square, and we'll be parking on the west side of the square as well as the north side of the square. And one thing that's a little bit different this year than in previous years is that we'll have Broadway blocked all the way off to B Street between Main and B, and we'll have the Kiwanis will be serving a pancake breakfast out in front of the old armory. So that'll be a fun event, and what we're hoping to do is attract more people in from the town of Fairfield and surrounding areas that will want to be part of the event. So if you haven't seen the Power Wagons before, and if you haven't seen them come down the highway, it's quite an amazing thing to see.
So one of the things we're doing to bring the public more in and let the Fairfielders know more, or get them excited about Power Wagons and see them as artistic experiences, is our show at Icon Gallery. In the front we have some fantastic posters from the 50s, just printed in that style of printing that just sort of knocks you out. They're just sort of like retro masterpieces. And then we enter into a section that talks about the Arabian expedition to in 1950. Now, how did you and George get hooked up?
Well, George and I didn't know George. The first time I met George was in 1995, I believe. Could be 94. We're not sure the exact day we met, but I found out about this book about 20 years ago, and the name of the book was Qadaban and Sheba. And I got a copy of it, and I, 15 or 20 years ago, I was researching it at the public library, and Jim Rubis actually happened to research it for me, and we could find no mention of a film called Qadaban and Sheba anywhere. And so I kind of let the thing die, and then I was at home one day, and somebody from my office called and said, there's a guy here who was part of the Arabian expedition, and he's getting ready to leave. And I said, do not let him leave. I'm on my way. And I drove down there. George was going to leave that day, and instead he spent the night, and we talked for many, many hours about that. And that's how we met. Not too much later than that, we had the great opportunity to visit Wendell Phillips, the expedition leader's sister in Falls Church, Virginia. And out of the blue, she pulled out a number of boxes of material that we had never seen or George hadn't seen in a long time. And that's where our connection comes from. And George and I have been great friends ever since.
And you started collecting the materials. I know that you're a great collector, and one of the things you've collected is all the materials and photos and various items that he is not holding on himself and Marilyn's not holding on to. So you're kind of creating a catalog of the whole event so that we don't forget about it in time, because it seems like a very significant, like the classic adventure expedition.
Well, it really is, and I think as you'll find out from George that this was not just any expedition, but the collection came from about three different places. One was from the Chrysler Corporation, through a collection from someone else that I had bought back a number of years ago. There were photos, but these were unidentified photos, and it wasn't until I met George that we knew what the photos were, where they were taken, and so forth. And then we had Marilyn Phillips Hodgson, who is Wendell's sister. She was able to supply us with other photos that we hadn't seen. And then, of course, George was kind enough to give me a lot of his personal collection of his photos, since he was one of the photographers on the collection. And that's where the whole reason that this show is even possible is because of George, because it was George who took a lot of these photos, and he knew where they were taken and what the subject matter was, and that was is invaluable. And of course, you know, no one else is going to be able to tell you that. So
George, let's talk a little bit about this expedition. This was not just any expedition. This was Hollywood stuff. This was Wendell Phillips, a guy who many people think sparked the whole idea of Indiana Jones in people's minds. But the true story is more than fiction could be. He talks, he goes and asks Chrysler Corporation to give him a dozen Power Wagons, and they give him 15 or 16 free. And then the guy gets on the phone and calls all his cronies, the corporate leaders of America, to give Wendell anything he needs to make this thing happen. And then tell us the story of how Wendell got you involved.
Got mail.
Again, short.
Oh dear.
We got about 20 minutes here. We can always do another show.
That's probably the most common question I get. How'd you meet Wendell and get involved with him? I was in high school at the time, up in Concord, California, is where Wendell lived and where we lived. And my dad was in the Navy. He was a flight surgeon during the Second World War, stationed overseas in Japan, or over in the South Pacific. And I saw this cute little blonde on the campus, and I got up the courage to ask her out. I've never asked a girl out for a date before. And lo and behold, she accepted. So I ran home, and I said, hey, Mom, I got a date. What do I do now? And Mom explained to me about girls and things like that. And in the absence of my dad, and did a very good job of it. And the big day came to pick her up. We were going to go to a movie, Saturday afternoon matinee. And I went over to her house, and as I was walking up the sidewalk, a taxi cab pulled up. And out stepped a young man in a Merchant Marine uniform, and it was Wendell Phillips. And Marilyn, his sister, who I'd asked out, and their mother almost ran me down greeting their boy, their son, because he hadn't been home in 3 years. And they invited me in, and I was able to share their homecoming with them. And I never did get a chance to take Marilyn out until many, many, many years later she took me out. But that was the beginning. Wendell would send things home, souvenirs home worldwide when he collected stuff. And
but you kind of hooked up with him kind of as a buddy, right?
Yes. Yeah. We double dated. Matter of fact, he didn't even know how to drive a car. I taught him how to drive a car. And we dated up there. And then Dad came home from the service, and we moved down to Southern California, Glendale. And in the meantime, Wendell was putting together the University of California African Expedition. This is the University of California, Berkeley. And my dad asked me, he says, why don't you ask Wendell if you can go along? And I did, and Wendell refused, said, no, get your high school diploma before you do anything else. That's more important than anything. So I did. I went down to Southern California. Well, business would bring Wendell to Southern California periodically, and he'd come out, and we'd double date, and he would spend the night at the house, sleep on the couch. And one night we went to a dance, one of the Civic Auditorium dances, and took the girls home. We were sitting out in front of the house talking. He says, how would you like to go to Arabia with me and look for the Queen of Sheba? And I said, oh, man, I was 19 years old. I said, oh, man, that would be fantastic. Let me check with my folks. And he said, well, I've already checked with them. They said it was okay. So I'm not sure they want to get rid of me or what. But I eventually moved up. I went up to Wendell's home back up in Concord, and I spent several weeks there and learning about it. And then we went to Chrysler Corporation. I mean, another fellow, Charlie McCollum, who was our chief of motor transport. When Chrysler donated the power wagons to the foundation, to Wendell, they conceded to let us come back there, and they would teach us how to repair them. And so we had a marvelous 13 weeks there. As a matter of fact, later on, in 1995, when I met Dave, I started to restore my own power wagon. And all the information I learned at that class at Chrysler came back to me in the process of restoring a power wagon, which I was able to do. And from then on, then we went to Arabia. One of the things that, one of the great contributions, and probably the most important one in the long run, was from Ishmian Steamship Lines, United States Steel, was owned by United States Steel. They gave us the transportation to haul all this stuff over to Arabia.
Well, I saw the picture of them unloading them off of boats and things on, and that's quite a hero. I can't imagine that, just the logistics of pulling this thing off.
Tremendous. And Wendell was quite a, now Wendell was a young man, he was about 10 years older than I was. But he put me in charge of the logistics of it. I had to pull all this stuff together and get it on the ship.
Wow.
And that was an experience in itself. And we got everything aboard ship. And then we hauled it out there, and lo and behold, when we got there was no way to unload it. There was no dock on the South Arabian coast. The city of McCullough in South Arabia was still living in the 16th century. And we had to load the power wagons onto dhows, Arab dhows, and roll the dhows into the dock, and then drive the power wagon off the dhows onto the wharf. And
I might put in here that we have a film that we're showing every day at the gallery. Our hours are Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4, but at 2 o'clock every day we're going to show this 90-minute film about this adventure. And one of the things that's quite sticks to my mind is this driving the trucks off these little dhows onto the bank. There was one we almost lost it in the drink, huh?
Almost, not quite.
Well, go ahead. This story is so fantastic, we could go on and on.
People ask, well, what was the purpose? The primary mission of the expedition was to build a chronology of the history of South Arabia. Now, the South Arabia we're talking about were ancient kingdoms flourished in antiquity 2,500 years ago, where camel caravans carried frankincense and myrrh to the Eastern Mediterranean, the Eastern Mediterranean, King Solomon's court. The Queen of Sheba caravan, as she mentioned in the Old Testament in the Bible, carried frankincense and myrrh and gold to King Solomon. And for centuries, frankincense and myrrh has been the primary product, and it was produced and grown right there in Oman, in Yemen, in modern-day Oman and Yemen. And it still is, and I have samples of it. I show it there at the exhibit. And so they still grow it, and they still sell it, and you still buy it on the open market in the main cities of Yemen. Now, I even found a place you can buy it here in the United States. So it's a fairly common essence.
Yeah, well, I've burned it myself. I like that. The myrrh is incredible.
Yeah.
So what I recall from the film is that no Westerner had gone in to where the Queen of Sheba's temple is. Is that
That's right?
Right.
At the time we were there in 1951, we were working in what was called the Aden Protectorate. It was a British-controlled country, and the country of Yemen, which was in the southwestern part of the Arabian Peninsula, was an independent kingdom, completely closed Western, had been for centuries, and. Wendell got permission from the Imam, the King of Yemen, for us to make an initial trip into Yemen, into Marib, to look at what we didn't know what we were going to find. And we'd heard about things. We heard of there was a temple there. One of the nice things about Arabia, most of the archaeological sites are located at a high altitude, and the atmosphere is very dry and very hot, and so it preserves all these ruins. But the sands constantly blowing and shifting will expose ruins, and sometimes even Lawrence of Arabia, the famous Lawrence of Arabia, had been down to Marib and examined, and he was an archaeologist too by trade. And so we got permission to go in there, and on April 15th, 1951, we set foot in Marib. We were the first Americans to ever set foot in Marib. And Englishmen have been there, Germans have been there before, but Americans have never been there before, especially an archaeological group. And what we found was pretty fantastic, because we found inscriptions galore. I mean, we'd never seen anything like it before. The inscriptions were Sabine inscriptions, and they dated back about 2500. Now, none of them mentioned a Queen of Sheba. People have asked me, can you prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this was a Queen of Sheba's temple? No. We have to give you an honest answer and say no. We have every indication that it probably was. It certainly was around at the time that she reigned. The artifacts that we found there and the inscriptions that we read there all dated that area. And the temple itself is called the Mahram Belkis, and Belkis is Arabic for Sheba. So it was every indication, and certainly worthwhile investigating. So Wendell, in 1952, was able to excavate the entrance to the temple. It's called the peristyle. And he excavated it, and then because of a political upheaval, he got word that they were going to be assassinated, and they had to flee for their lives, and they fled on the power wagons. And
so
got
they
out
left
of the area.
Artifacts, and they left the,
all the artifacts.
A lot of the power wagons. They just got out of there.
Left all the power wagons there, and then in 2001, Marilyn called me and asked if I'd come out again and do some video work and photography, and I said, "Oh, I'd be happy to." And as it turned out, just exactly 50 years to the day, April 15th, 2001, we entered Marv again.
Wow.
And that was quite an experience. It brought tears to my eyes because I had given up any thought of ever going back. And we went back, and of course, unfortunately, over that 50-year period, the peristyle entrance had been covered up with sand again. And so Maryland had started successive expeditions to remove the sand again and reopen the peristyle.
So they dug out quite a bit again?
Yes, they dug out quite a bit again.
Are they finding artifacts down there?
Oh, yes, they're finding artifacts and very valuable ones. And these all belong to the government of Yemen.
But back in 1950, stuff was like being taken out of the country, wasn't it? Going to museums around the
world? Yes, well, they still have the problem today. Some archaeological sites in Yemen are located on tribal lands. And the tribes excavate and they find artifacts and they'll smuggle them out of the country right. for the money.
But back in those days, was it legal to, or was it still kind of illegal to do
it
that?
Was, well, it was legal because the Yemen government at that time didn't know what they had.
Mm-hmm.
When we showed them what they had, because we had an arrangement that we got, when foundation got 50% of the artifacts found.
Okay.
And then the Yemen government later on loaned to the foundation a number of artifacts, and it went on tour, an exhibit.
So that's the show that was at the Smithsonian way back?
Yes, it was at the Smithsonian, and then there was a world tour. The exhibit opened in Barcelona, Rome, London, and then it came back to Washington, D.C. again last year at the Smithsonian, at the Sackler Museum. Mm-hmm. A lot of the objects were put on display.
And tell us what you told me about the difference between our exhibit and the one at the Smithsonian.
Well, I was telling Bill that this our exhibit is so much better because the one at the Smithsonian, I realized, was an art object. They were showing art objects, but that's all they showed. They had no captions. They had no photographs. There's no way to tell a story. And I was standing there by one of the exhibits, and I started talking about it. And I asked people, I said, would you like to know about it? And I said, I was on the original expedition. I took photographs of them digging this out of the ground. And oh, they were all excited. I had about 20 or 30 people around me, and I went to each exhibit. And Marilyn told me, she said, boy, George, I'm sure glad you showed up.
Well, it's the story that brings it all to life.
Yes.
And it's an incredible story.
Well, this is where you've done a marvelous job, the best I've ever seen in an exhibit, Bill. And because the photographs we have on display down there at the Icon, is it tells a story. It tells it very well. I don't have to sit there and stand there. And I know that I believe it's going to be on display until the end of July. There's no way I can stay up here for that length of time.
Now, I might say that there's a chance that Marilyn, Wendell's sister, will come for the next First Friday Art Walk.
We're trying. I've contacted her, and we're going to see what happens.
Well, I hope she can come. That'd be great.
If she comes up, I'll come back up, of course.
Good. It would be nice if you both could meet the public at that time.
Yes.
We'll work that out.
We look forward to it.
But let me mention that this Thursday, we're going to get this on the air like
Wednesday morning.
And also you can get it off the website at KRUU, should be able to. And so Thursday night, June 7th at ICON, George will be meeting the public, and Donna Colby and I will be there, and we'll be asking some questions, getting the whole thing rolling. But he really would like to have interaction with the public, and we'll have a question and answer session at that time. So that's 8 o'clock at ICON 58 North Main on Thursday, June 7th, coming right up. So let's have a few final words here. We got a couple minutes left.
Hey, can I mention my book?
Ask, do, go ahead.
Okay, we got a few minutes left. The whole thing started with my sons getting together. Dad, why don't you write a book about your experiences for your grandkids? And that's how I met David. I got involved in restoring a par wagon and the whole thing. I had two books published, and they're available, and I'll be happy to sign up if anyone wants to get anyone there when I'm there. And also, I have copies of Wendell's book, Katabon and Sheba, which is out of print, and I'll be happy to sign that one also.
Now, Alan's been sitting here observing the whole thing. You got any final comments from your side? What do you think about such a thing?
Well, it's really exciting. It's interesting also from the point of view of Icon Gallery to take a look at how we have kind of broadened the definition of what a gallery does and broadened our notion of what art is. Because obviously this sort of adventure is itself an extraordinary creative work that involved dozens of people putting their heads together and solving problems and making very creative, innovative decisions to make something happen that there was really no obvious precedent for. But also I think it opens up Icon to the community on a much larger basis. People hopefully will realize that what we're trying to do is not just bring New York and Chicago level top quality fine art to the public, but also to bring top quality art from all other dimensions of life. So we're very grateful to George and Dave for helping this exciting presentation to come together. Dave.
One thing I wanted to say is that I really appreciated what Icon's been able to do. You know, much of this collection of photographs and memorabilia and some of the posters that I have, which right now some of these 50 and 60 year old posters are so fragile that just opening them up, they have a tendency to want to tear. You just can't have somebody handling them. And I, for years, some of the stuff I've had in my possession for 15 or 20 years, and it wasn't until Bill and I got together and discussed it that we were able to figure out a way to bring this stuff to light where people can actually see it.
And we were still figuring it out the night before the show.
We were down to the wire Bill was still putting captions on the wall. It was, but I have really enjoyed just working with Icon, and it wouldn't have been possible with all the help we had. And really appreciate being able to display it. And I know that our visitors from out of town will really enjoy it.
Well, it's been a pleasure working with you, Dave, and it's really been a treat to have George come and be here with us. So thank you both.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.